سورة الفاتحة. حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل، نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد
وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المتين، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، الف لام ميم، احسب الناس ان يتركوا ان يقولوا آمنا وهم لا يفتنون. صلوات على محمد وعلى آله.
اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد.
الله سبحانه وتعالى says in this ayat, does man think that he can say, I believe, and get away with it? No. Anyone who says, I believe, is going to be tried, going to be tested, and they will go through fitna. Fitna is in the meaning of test, meaning of examining something, to clarifying something. And Allah is doing this clarification to see who is a true believer and who is a fake believer. So there are two types of believers, those who are real and those who are fake. And the only way it will be known whether they are real or they are fake is if they are tested and tried. And we are looking at the reasons for why these trials come upon us. Why do we go through sufferings in life? It is not that Allah likes to make people suffer. He's not a sadist, you know, that he wants to see people go through pain. There are reasons why people go through sufferings. Why they go through difficulties. And the first reason that I had mentioned that we have been talking about for the past few days is that people go through sufferings in life not because Allah is testing them, because they have done certain sins that bring upon themselves suffering, that bring down sufferings on themselves. There are certain sins and a list of sins that we went through. There are more, but inshallah you can do your own research on that. And you see that these are reasons. The first reason is the sins that we do. When we do those sins, then we make our life miserable. Allah gives us sufferings because of the sins that we have done. Making fun of believers, disrespecting your parents. These are sins that if you want to make your life miserable, then this is the easiest way of doing it. You do it, you will see that the natural reaction in life is going to be that your life is going to be difficult and there will be sufferings and pain in your life. So this is the first reason, our own sins, we do it. When we want to see and when we want to analyze our life, and everyone goes through suffering if he's a believer. If there is a mu'min or someone who says he's a mu'min and he does not go through sufferings, then really, what Allah is saying is true. What he needs to see is whether he is truly a believer or not. We see that a person came to our Imam and said, I know a mu'min whose life is so easy and so good. You know, I mean, he has everything. No problems. He has money. His life is easy. It's like an American dream come true. You know, he has everything. And when you look at it, he was looking at the reaction of the Imam. That, you know, the Imam will say some good words. But the Imam said, you know, that means that Allah must really hate him. Allah must really hate him. He says, why do you say that? He says, if he is a mu'min, if someone is a mu'min, then at least in 40 days Allah must try him one time. He has to go through trials in life if he's a mu'min. But if he doesn't have no iman, if his iman is zero, if he is a non-Muslim, if he is a mushrik, if he is a kafir, then Allah does not test him. Why should Allah test them? You see, when the word fitna, right? The literal meaning of fitna comes from the fact that when you put the silver ore in the fire to make silver out of it. You put it in the fire and then you see all the bad minerals are gone and only the silver is remaining. That's called doing fitna. You take the bad things out. So you see, no one is going to put a brick in the fire and do fitna with it. Right? No one's going to take a rock and do a fitna with it. Why? Because the rock, no matter how much you test it, it's still going to be a rock. The only thing you put in the fire is something that is precious. You put gold in the fire to purify it. You put silver in the fire to purify it. You don't put rock in the fire. That's why if Allah is putting a mu'min or a person through a fire, it's because he has iman inside of him that Allah wants to take it out. He has iman, he has something precious in his heart. That's why Allah is putting him through the fire. Otherwise, if Allah deems someone unworthy, and they have nothing inside themselves, that's why Allah says, I don't need to test them. I don't need to put them. Why? It doesn't make sense to put rubbish in the fire, right? And do all these testing with it. There's nothing to purify. Right? He must have something inside of him before Allah tests it. My friends, understand this. This is what is the basis of imtihan, the basis of trials in life is iman. We learn that from this ayat. The second basis we learn in hadith. From the hadith we learn there's a second standard of trials, of why trials come, and that is the love of Ahlul Bayt. There's the love of Ahlul Bayt. Someone went to Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam. Right? He said that, you know, I want to be your Shia. I want to be a Shia. So he thought that, you know, Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq is running a Islamic center, you know, we take membership, you know. Oh great, here's the membership form. Fill it out. I mean, if someone comes over here to the Islamic center here, Zainab Islamic Center, and says, I want to be a member, then you take out a membership form, right? And he thought it would be the same thing. There's a membership form he has to fill out. But Imam said, are you ready to face difficulties in life? Are you ready to face difficulties in life? I mean, all the things. He should be glad someone is coming. Make it easy for him. But the Imam is scaring him. He's saying, listen, you want to be a Shia? Then it means there will be difficulties in life. In other words, we see that the love of Ahlul Bayt is the second basis for trials. Those who claim to have love of Ahlul Bayt, then they will be tried by Allah. Just like those people who say they're mu'min, they're going to be tried by Allah. So when they are tried by Allah, the issue is, what do we do in order to pass these tests? What is the basis of this? I mean, how do we pass these trials? All these difficulties come, you know, the tests come, how do we pass them? Well, the first thing to know is the why these are happening to us. Why these trials are happening to us. And this is where we see, my friends, that sometimes the second reason now I'm mentioning of why these trials happen. Why does Allah take trials from believers? Second reason, right? The first reason is our own sins. And that's where we have to pay attention to first. Do a checklist. Have I disrespected my parents? Checklist. No. Right? Have I made fun of believers? No. If you have made fun of believers, there's no reason to go to the second reason that Allah is testing us. Why? Because you have done something that is bringing down difficulties in your life. That's bringing down suffering. So what you need to do now is go through the list of sins and see, am I doing one of those sins that is bringing down these difficulties? Then when you do that, then you come to the second reason. And let me now explain to you the second reason if you send me a salawat. The second reason why Allah gives us difficulties, and just as an introduction I will mention this so that you know. My friends, when you read a page out of a book, right, when you read a page out of a book, or you watch a clip of a movie, you know, you watch a clip, or you read a page out of the book, and you saw that the hero is beating up the villain. You know, the hero of the movie is beating up the villain. That's all you saw. Now, if that's all you saw, then you will be like, if I ask you what happened in that movie, you say, oh, you know, this terrible person is beating someone up and doing blow. Hero beats up the villain. And that's all I saw. And so all I'm thinking is that this is the bad guy. Hero is the bad guy. And he's beating up this man. He can't even defend himself. And this guy is beating him to the pulp. Right? So that's the image I got, right? That's the image I got. If I read one page of the book, if I don't read the whole book, I don't understand the whole story. If I don't see the whole movie, I don't understand the whole story. I just see a clip or I read a page, and you know what? I come to a conclusion that this is wrong. What is happening is wrong. My friends, this is what happens many times. When we look at things, or when we see something happening, we are only seeing a part of the story. And what we get out of it is not the whole picture. Let me give an example if you send me a salawat. Prophet Musa, he was traveling through the desert and he came to an oasis. There was water there. There's some trees there for shade, and there was a hill next to it. He went there, drank some water, and he wanted to go on the hill to get some fresh air next to the pond. He went on the hill. When he went on the hill, he was resting there. While resting there, he saw a strange scene. He saw something strange happen. And it all happened in a little while. What he saw was a man, a horse rider, come to the pond. And he came there. He made his horse drink the water. And he was resting. He rested for a few. Then he got up and he got on his horse and left. He left. You saw him leave. As he left, Prophet Musa noticed that he left his wallet, his money bag. He forgot his money bag. And before he could call him, the guy was gone. Then all of a sudden, he sees a shepherd come to the oasis from the other side. You see the shepherd come there. And he comes over there, and his sheep drinking the water, and he's also drank the water and starts looking around for a place to rest. And his eyes fall on the money bag. He looks at the money bag from far and he runs towards it. And he runs towards it and then he takes it and opens it. Now whatever he saw inside made him smile. It made him smile. He was happy to see what was inside. You know, when we speak of a wallet, nowadays people don't have cash in their wallets. Right? They have plastic. Right? They have plastic in their wallet. In those days, wallet meant that was your bank account. Right? It literally was your bank account. Whatever money you have earned in your life is there in the money bag. That's it. That's all you have. Right? People used to carry around their money bag. Right? And that was everything inside there. And there was a lot of money inside there. The shepherd looked at that and he was smiling. He was showing all his 32 teeth. He was so happy. And then after he sees that, he closes the bag all of a sudden, looks to his right and left and sees that no one is around. And he takes the sheep and makes a run for it. Now before Musa can stop him, he was high in the hill. Before he can say something, he was gone. He was gone. He was wondering, you know, I mean, that the poor horse rider left his money there, and the shepherd comes and he takes the money. And obviously you're thinking, this guy is a thief. He's a thief. What else can you call him? He's a thief. So he went away. Then Musa is like wondering what's going on, and as he's wondering, right away, he sees an old pious person coming. He is old and he looks pious. And he came over there, an old man, and he was now resting under a shade. Saw it? He was resting under a shade. And so Musa is looking at that person, and all of a sudden he sees that the original horse rider who lost the money back comes back. Obviously to look for his purse. He comes back frantically, is searching everywhere for his purse, looking for the money back. He couldn't find it. And all of a sudden, he sees the old pious person. He sees the old pious person, and he goes over there to the old pious person. Now, Musa is witnessing this from the top. And he sees that he starts to ask, you know, ask that pious person, the old man, whatever he said this. That discussion changed into an argument. The argument changed violent. And then, at the end, the horse rider took out his sword and killed the old pious man. He killed the old pious man, obviously blaming him because that he took the money. And he killed him and looked around, saw that no one is a witness, and he went away. And Musa saw this whole scene and one city. And obviously he was scratching his head as to what is going on here. I mean, the injustice that is being done. My friends, if you have a chance, you can experiment it yourself. Go to any street, go to any intersection, go to any bus stop, go to any train station, and just sit back and see the scene that is happening there. The image of what is happening in front of you. Most of us don't even notice what's going on around us. If you just see what's going on, you will see a lot of injustices being done. A lot of wrong being done if you can just go back, relax and see. You know who has the most stories to tell? Homeless people. Really. Go and ask homeless people. They will start off with stories of what they have seen. They have nothing else to do but just to look at people and see the show. And they look at it and they have stories. And you will see that if you also go there and start looking at what's going on, in one scene you will see how many things happen. You also, this is the same thing Musa saw. All of a sudden he saw this. And then to him, of course, this is injustice. The horse rider lost his money. The thief was the shepherd who ran away with the money. And then an innocent old pious person is killed in between. And then Musa, who spoke to Allah, he called out to Allah and said, Allah, what is happening here? What is happening? Look at this. This is your kingdom. This is your kingdom. Now, Fir'aun is not ruling here. There's no unjust person ruling here. This is not an unjust system. How is there such gross injustice happening in your kingdom? How can you let this happen? I mean, this is your kingdom. Allah, this is you. You are the just ruler. You are letting this happen. Allah replied to Musa and said, Musa, what happened? Musa said, complete injustice. He said, tell me what happened. You know that the horse rider lost the money, the shepherd ran away with the money, and an innocent person was killed for the crime. This is injustice. So Allah told Musa, Musa, do you really think it's injustice? He said, well, that's what I saw. You see, Musa just read one page of the book. He just saw one clip of the movie. Allah said, let me now tell you the rest of the story. He said, Musa, let me tell you now what happened. Let me tell you now what happened. He said that this person, the horse rider, and the shepherd's father, the horse rider's father, were both business partners. The shepherd's father had lent the horse rider's father money. And then, as he lent him the money, no one knew about it because the horse rider's father died. And there was no proof that he gave him the money. That money was given to him. That money belonged to the shepherd's father. And now, because the shepherd's father is also dead, now that money belongs to the shepherd. Musa, you are seeing that the shepherd is running away with the money. But Musa, he's not running away with the money. I'm just returning his money that the horse rider's family owes to him. That money was owed by him. And now I returned it. And the amount of money his father lent him was the exact amount that was in the bag. And hence he took that bag. He took it away. Obviously for us, we need to understand something. That Allah is doing this. Allah is doing this. Why? He saw the money, there's no owner, and he left it. In Islam, my friends, if you see a money bag like that, don't think, Allah is returning my money, maybe my father. In Islam, the rule is that if you see money lying around, or if you see a wallet lying around, it's makruh to pick it up. It's makruh to pick it up. It's not haram, it's makruh. Allah didn't say it's haram to pick it up, it's makruh. The reason Allah said it's makruh is that if you do pick it up, now you better find the owner because now you're responsible for it. Now you have to find the owner and you have to announce it every day in the masjid until 1 year. To make sure that you find the owner of who this wallet belongs to. Right? Because you picked it up. So that's the reason it says makruh. Don't pick it up, let it be, let the owner come back. If everyone follows this laws, then no one would lose anything. Because no matter where they place it, they can always go back and retrace the step and find it there. Right? This is how Islam is doing it. So Allah is saying, listen, I'm just returning the money to the shepherd. That is owed by the horse rider's family to him. But Allah, that's true, you did that. But what about the old pious person? This old pious person, he is killed innocently, unjustly. Oh, terrible, the zulm. He says, Musa, let me tell you, this old pious person was not always pious. You are not always pious. Everyone becomes pious when they're old. When you're old, you can't do anything but to become pious. That's the situation. You become old, you have to become pious. What else are you going to do? You can't do anything else. You can't get in trouble anymore. So you might as well be pious. Right? So this guy you think is so old and pious with this big long white beard, you think he was pious? No, he wasn't pious all the time. You know how the horse rider's father died? This was the murderer. This old pious person was the one who killed him. He killed the horse rider's father. So Musa, what was I doing? I was helping the horse rider to take revenge for his father's murder. Understand this. I was just helping the horse rider to take revenge for his father's murder. He took the life of this man, the man who took the life of his father. So Musa, you saw his scene, and in your eyes, it looked completely unjust, and there was zulm everywhere. But when I see the scene, I see it as complete justice being done. And the difference is, you just read one page of the book and you decided what happened. Musa, I know the whole book and I know where justice is being done. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. My friends, in life, this is what happens. We see certain things and we are just seeing one page of the book. We are looking at one clip of the movie and we are making judgment on the whole movie. We're making judgment on the whole book. That's why Allah says that you might think you know, but you are only seeing a part of the story. You haven't seen the whole story. It is Allah who knows the whole story. That's why Allah says, in my kingdom, justice will always prevail. No matter what you do, I am the one who's tying the knots of justice and making sure that every loose case is closed with justice. My friends, this is what Allah is doing. A lot of times we don't see that. We don't see what is going on. And now I come to the second reason. Why does Allah do this? These trials and these difficulties. Well, Allah explained this to us in the Quran. Allah explained this in God in an incident that we all know about. And we have heard it multiple times, and I'm just going to repeat it briefly so that we can understand. And in that, Allah is giving the reasons why He gives trials, why He puts believers through sufferings. Now let me tell that if you send me a salawat. The incident where Allah speaks about this is where Prophet Musa met Khidr. Prophet Khidr. You know the incident. Now let me tell you the rest of the story. Now let me tell you what is behind the incident. My friends, understand this. What we see, what is happening in this world, right, is something that is apparent. You know, we see it, we look at it. You know, we see these things happening in the world, right? Look at all these things that happen. What we see is like a stage. We see the drama unfolding in the stage. We see a drama that's unfolding in the stage. We see the actors. We see the people who are doing the acting and playing the different roles. We see relationships of people. But when you see a drama and you see the actors on stage, you know, behind the curtains, what we don't see is that there are many people who are working to make this drama come true. There's many things that are happening behind the scene. There's the lights people, the audio, video, this and that. I mean, we just saw a drama, right? Those who were here before the speech, you know, we had a skit. We saw the drama, we saw the actor, we saw all these things. But you didn't see the person who was doing the audio. You didn't see the person who was directing. You didn't see the person who was behind the scenes helping out. You see, what's happening here is being helped out from those who have acting behind the scenes. My friends, both of these, what we see and what we don't see, are two sides. What we see is apparent, and there are things that are happening behind the scenes that we don't see. And these are two different realms. And both of them have their own set of rules. Both of them have their own set of rules. Allah has made. There is knowledge for what is happening in the apparent. There is knowledge for what is happening in the hidden. The knowledge that dictates what's happening in the apparent is called Shariat. Shariat is the law of Allah that dictates what we see. It is called Ilmu Shariat. What is happening behind the scenes is also has a set of laws. It's called Ilmu Taqween. Something that is happening behind the scenes that we don't see. We don't see that. And both of these are knowledges. That's why Allah says, Allah is Alimu Ghaybi wa Shahadat. Ghaib is what we don't see. Shahadat is what we see. Ghaib has its own rules. Shahadat has its own rules. What we are looking at things, the Shariat of Allah, is what we see. What is behind the scenes that we don't see has also a set of rules and a knowledge that dictates it. Both of these things have it. So now you see, Musa was the master of the Shariat, was the master of the law. He knew the law of what is apparent, the Shariat. Khidr was given the knowledge of Ghaib and the rules of Ghaib. He was the one doing things behind the curtains. He's one of those people Allah has appointed to do things behind the curtains that we don't see. Both of these. And both of these are knowledges. So now when Musa met Khidr, Allah explained it or described it in this way. He says, Majma'ul Bahrain, the meeting of two oceans. One is the ocean of Shariat, the other is the ocean of Ghaib. Both these oceans met. Musa met Khidr. And Musa said to Khidr, I heard that you know something I don't know. Khidr said, yes, Allah has given me knowledge. He said, well, I want to learn what you have. My friends, understand what's going on here. Musa is the master of the law. He's the Ulul Adam prophet. He knows the law inside out. And he's asking Khidr that, listen, obviously you know something that I don't know. I want to learn from you. And Khidr tells Musa, you can't be patient. You won't be able to be patient with me. You're going to lose your patience. If I was there and I heard Khidr say that, I would be like, Prophet Khidr, with all due respect, who has more patience than Musa? I mean, Allah appointed him for the Jews. He has to have patience. I mean, who else is more patient than Prophet Musa? We don't have any more other person who's more patient. If he can't be impatient, who are we? Right? But Khidr is saying, you can't be patient with me. Musa is saying, oh, What do you mean I can't? Of course I will be patient with you. I want to learn. So, thither said, all right, let's go. And the learning began. Musa went with thither, both of them, and Musa is happy that he's going to learn the knowledge. And you know, prophets, my friends, this is the sign of, you know, I mean, obviously prophets. I mean, that prophet who's an Ulul Azam prophet, and he is right at his time, the most learned person in the world, right? The biggest Ayatullah, the most Alam person. When he sees that there's knowledge that he doesn't know, he is ready to become a student. He is ready to become a student. He says, I want to learn. Imagine that. This is the sign. This is the quality of Anbiya. Right away he said, I want to learn under you. Alright, they went along. As they went along, they came to this boat. Got into the boat. And Musa's obviously enjoying the fresh air, the sea. And all of a sudden, he sees Khidr making a hole in the boat. Musa looked at him, what are you doing? It's obvious what I'm doing. I'm making a hole in the boat. He says, I know that. You know, he said, what are you doing? This is wrong. He said, your boat? No. Then you're making a hole in the boat. I mean, how can you do that? You're making a hole in the boat. You see, Musa is speaking from his knowledge. It is haram to destroy someone else's property. It's haram to do something wrong to someone else's property. This doesn't belong to you. How can you do that? I mean, it's like, for example, I don't like you, so what do? I can't face you, so I'm going to go and make a scratch in your car. He says, there. Take that. And you come out then, you're like, who did this to my car? Right? Imagine that. I mean, a prank, right? And Musa's like, hey, you know, I mean, one of all, like for example, you go out with Maulana, let's say. You know, you go out with a Maulana, and you're going out somewhere, and you see him, you go to the restaurant, and you see him, for example, breaking the dishes. Maulana. Are you really a Maulana? You're breaking other people's property. I mean, what's wrong with you? You see that? What's happening to Musa's mind? Understand his psychology. He's looking at the guy and he's saying, what's wrong with you? You're making a hole in the boat. And Khidr said, you see, I told you, you cannot be patient with me. And Musa is like, all right. I'll be patient. Don't worry. I'm with you. Let's go on. I'll let this slide. So, they go forward. Musa and Khidr. Right? Obviously, Musa in his mind, you know, like, you know, I mean, the guy just destroyed someone's property. I mean, you don't expect that from a prophet. Right? Then, you know, he comes over there and sees this young little child. He's a very cute little child. You know, look at the cute child, and while Musa is admiring the cuteness of the child, here goes Khidr again. He kills the child. He kills the child. Musa, obviously, he's like, what did you do? What do you do that for? The child. But this is wrong, it's haram. I mean, how can you do that? How can you take the life of another person? I don't understand it. This is wrong. I mean, really, I was in this position, I would be making sure I'm with the right person. Are you the person I'm supposed to be with? Are you a prophet? Who hired you? Where's your resume? I want to make sure we have experience for this job. I mean, what's wrong with this? I mean, Khidr is a prophet of Allah and he just killed a child. An innocent child. He just killed him. And Musa is looking at this and he's saying, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. There's something wrong here. This cannot be. How can this be? How can you kill an innocent child? See, my friends, understand this. Musa is like, you know, I mean, What's going on here? I mean, you don't expect, I mean, this is something out of his capacity. Then Khidr said, you see, I told you, you cannot be patient with me. Musa calmed himself down and said, alright, you know what? Alright, I'll be patient. I'll be patient. Let's go forward. They come forward. And they come forward, and then, you know, here's what happens. They come to this place where there's people who are unjust, rude, evil. They hate Allah. Very bad people. And Musa is angry with them. He's upset with them. What kind of bad people are these? Evil people. Obnoxious people. You know, you see some people are really obnoxious, rude to you, have no respect for other people's rights. And so Musa's angry. He said, I know, we need to do something about this. Khidr said, you're right. Let's do something about this. And they go, and Khidr starts to build a broken wall that they had. He says, you know, let's build this wall for them. What do you mean, build a wall? I mean, Musa was thinking about something else. And Musa was thinking of going in there and, you know, taking care of them. You know, he wanted to go in there and take care of them. But, you know, Musa is like, what do you mean build a wall? You want to help them? You want to help these people? He says, that's it now. I mean, you killed an innocent child and you're helping oppressors. There's something wrong here. There's something wrong here. Allah has taught me knowledge and you are doing everything against Allah's knowledge. Allah has given me the knowledge of Shariat, and everything you have done is against the Shariat. Everything you have done is against Allah's laws. Khidr said, alright, that's it. That's enough. This is the separation between you and me. Finish. My friends, now let me go back and tell you what happened. And Khidr explained this, and I want you to understand this. In this one incident, what Allah did, my friends, for us, to help us to understand, and also to Musa, but through Musa, Allah explained to the universe, through this one incident, what Allah did is that He opened the window of ghaib. He raised the curtains to see what is happening behind the scenes. To let us know what are the rules of ghaib and how ghaib is working. This incident is teaching us what is going on behind the curtains. We just see the drama. Now we need to see what's going on behind the curtains. And Allah explained that through this incident. And the first thing we notice from this, my friends, is this. That the rules of Sharia are different than the rules of Ghaib. Rules of Sharia are different than the rules of Ghaib. That's why Musa, who is the expert of the Sharia, could not understand what Khidr was doing. He had no clue what was going on. What is Khidr doing? He had no clue what was going on. Because it goes against the ilm that Allah has taught. And now Khidr explained to him. He said, listen, now let me tell you what happened. And in that explanation that Khidr gave, my friends, he explained to us why Allah puts us through fitna. The second reason. And he explained three reasons under that one reason. It's one is like A, B, and C. Three reasons he explains why Allah tries you in this one incident. The first thing he said is what? He said, listen, you were upset at that boat and I made a hole in the boat. Now let me tell you, Musa, why I did it. He says, that boat belonged to some fishermen. Those fishermen needed that boat. That is their means of income. If they lose the boat, then they are going to starve. They won't have an income. Okay? So far, so good. What else? I mean, you know, the whole. Get to the whole part. Well, you know, Musa, here's what happened. There's a king who's coming and who's confiscating every functional boat. Every boat that functioned, he's confiscating that to put in his navy. So what I did is that I made a hole in the boat. I made the hole in the boat so the king would not get it. That he would leave it because it's not functioning. So he would leave the boat and go on, and the fishermen would have the boat. This is what we read in the Quran. Now let me tell you the rest of the story. Where is the difficulty? What is the suffering? Where is the fitna in this? Well, here it is, my friends. What Khidr did is that he put the hole in the boat. Those fishermen, they did face loss at the fact that their boat was damaged. Their boat was damaged. And they faced that loss. They went through that difficulty and they will have to repair it. They will have to repair it. Until then, they might not earn money. Until then, they might not be able to do things. But here's the thing that happens. Is this better for them? They have the boat, but it's damaged. Is that better? Or losing their boat altogether is better? You see, to them, it's better if their boat gets damaged. Then they lose it altogether. So I made them go through that suffering of having a damaged boat so that they don't lose their boat. Now you understand, the first reason Allah tries us, my brothers, is that He puts us through a smaller difficulty so that He can protect us from a greater harm that is coming to us. This is why Allah tries us. He says, listen, if I put you through difficulty, the first reason is that there's a greater harm that might be coming. And in order to protect you from that harm, I'm making you go through this smaller difficulty. I'm making you go through this difficulty so that you don't have to face the greater difficulty that's coming. I get into an accident outside on the street and I see my car is damaged. Who knows that it's good that I stopped over here. Maybe I might. If that might not be the case, maybe Allah was stopping me from a greater accident that's happening. So He made me go through this difficulty. My friends, this is the first reasoning and wisdom behind Allah's trials. The second reason is about, what about the child? You killed an innocent child. He says, you know, Musa, you like that innocent child? You thought he was cute? But that child belonged to two Mormon parents, and this child was going to be a tyrant. He was going to be a tyrant. Yes, you like the child. All children are cute. Right? All children are cute. Saddam Hussein was cute. If you had met Saddam Hussein when he was 3, you would have said, nice baby. Right? You would have said that. All children are cute. What do you think? But this guy was going to turn out to be a tyrant. And Allah, because He knew that there are Mu'min parents that He has, and He is going to tyrannize them in order to protect them, Allah took this child. And instead of that, Allah is going to give them a greater child, a better child who's going to serve them. A mu'min child. See, this is what Allah says in the Quran. Now let me tell you where the suffering is. Those parents who lost that child who's going to be a tyrant, they are going to cry for him. They are going to miss him. Their hearts are going to be broken for him. Imagine that. Those parents who lost that child, he's dead now. If your child dies in an accident, so what happens? You look at that child and you say, my goodness, your heart is broken. You will be depressed. You will be crying if you lose your child. Same thing happened to those parents. They went through that suffering. But for what? To what extent? To give them a better child. Allah is going to replace them with a better child. So now what is Allah saying? The second reason He's giving to us is that He makes us go through suffering for what? So that if He takes something from us, He is going to give instead of this something better than what He has taken. If Allah takes something from us, if He takes our child away, if He takes our health away, if He takes something away from us, the reason He is taking it away is to replace it with something better. My friends, Allah does not take anything from a mu'min that He is not going to replace it with something better than that. If He takes away something from you, if you lose something, then it means Allah is planning to replace it with something better. If you are a mu'min. This is the reason, my friends, the second reasoning Allah is giving us. Now the third reasoning we go to, and understand it from here. That wall, those people you saw were rude. Yes, there were two orphans there. There is money, there is inheritance. Their inheritance is under that wall. You know this story, and I'm not going to explain it in detail. There's inheritance of those two kids in the wall. If that is revealed, if those orphans get that money now, then these people, these unjust people, are going to take it from them. So now what I did is that I built the wall so their inheritance can be protected. And then when they grow up, they will get that money and they will be able to use it. They will be able to get that money and defend it. So my friends, what is happening? Those two orphans are going to grow up poor. Those two orphans, because of what Khidr did, they are going to grow up poor. They are going to grow up in difficulties, with sufferings, because they don't have their inheritance. Because Khidr hid that inheritance. But you know, if he had not done that, then those people will have taken it away from him. That's why when Khidr did that, the third reason Allah is explaining why He gives us difficulties is because He wants to protect our interest. Mu'mineen, He wants to protect our interest by not giving to us when we are not able to defend it. My friends, understand this. Why? Why don't we, for example, if we don't have something, if you're not getting something, it means that Allah knows if you get it now, this will be harmful for you. That's why He waits until you are able to use it. And I'll explain this tomorrow in the third reason, more. But in all these incidents, you see, Allah opened the door, the window of ghaib, to show us what Allah is doing to us by making us go through suffering. My friends, this is the second reason. Allah knows the whole picture. We don't. We don't know the whole picture. And when we go through trials, imagine that Allah is making us go through trials so He can give something better to us. He can give something better to us. You know, a princess was taken as a slave and brought in the slave market. She went through the disgrace and humiliation of being a slave. A princess, imagine that? She went through the humiliation of being a slave. She went through all that hardship and difficulties and suffering. And she was sold in the slave market. Allah, You made her go through a lot. How much suffering? How much hardship? How many difficulties? Then you know what he said? That same princess, she went through all that. But then Allah says, now see how I work. I made her go through that so I can give her something better. And what did she get in return for the suffering? She became the wife of one imam and the mother of the imam who will rule the world. Narjis, I ask you now. You went through hardships. You were sold as a slave. You were taken as a slave. Now tell me. You went through these difficulties. Was the reward worth it? Is the reward worth it? That you came over here and you became the wife of Imam Hassan Askari and you became the mother of Imam Mahdi. Allah made her go through difficulties, made her go through hardship, but you see what Allah gave in return. You see, this is the reason. Another princess came from Persia, and she also went through hardships, and she also was taken as a slave and sold as a slave. Imam Ali saved her from the slave market. Imam Ali went there and saved her from the slave market. And you know what? She brought her home and got her married to Imam Hussein, and she became the mother of Imam Zainul Abidin. Imagine that. Shahar Bano, she said that there was a time when I was being taken as a slave that I was asking for my death. I was making dua that death is better than this life. Now when Allah gave the reward, now I ask Shahar Bano, tell me Shahar Bano, was it worth it? Is the reward better for you? You went through the difficulties, now you see the reward that you have been given. You know, you are the wife of an imam, you are the mother of an imam. Really, my friends, we go through difficulties in life and sufferings in life, and we need to wait to see what Allah has in store for us. To decide, and then see that yes, those difficulties were worth it. If Allah had accepted your dua then, and you had died, now understand what is better. You see, my friends, this is that exchange that a mu'min is making. This is that exchange. Allah is giving something. Allah is giving us that thing. And you see how Allah gives it to us. If we look at, my friends, what they had to go through, Allah had something in store for them, so they went through it. But you see, sometimes a mu'min, when you reach a stage like the people of Karbala has reached, then they're not expecting anything in return. And they're saying that, Allah, if you want to give us difficulties and sufferings, then let us give those difficulties, give all those sufferings. And we will take it. We will take it. We will go through those sufferings for your sake and for your pleasure. That's why someone came to Imam Hussein and said, Hussein, the people of Kufa, they have swords behind them. And they are ready to pounce on you and kill you. Imam Hussein said that if the deen of Muhammad, if the only way for protecting the deen of Muhammad, if the only way for the survival of the deen of Muhammad is through my blood, then oh swords, come and take me and kill me and take my blood. I am ready to give it. Imam Hussein, he had made his ideology clear, and the people who were with Imam Hussein, the family of Hussein, they have shown that. When they went through imprisonment, my friends, that imprisonment was not to give them something in return, but that imprisonment was because they said that if the deen of Muhammad, if the mission of Hussein is going to be accomplished by us becoming prisoners, then let us become prisoners so that we can accomplish the mission of Hussein. My friends, you see how Allah works and how Ahlul Bayt, they know the will of Allah and they act according to the will of Allah. Even those who are not masoom, you see, the family of Hussein, they understood what has to be done. And the most amongst them, my friends, is Zainab. My friends, let me tell you something so that you understand this. Before we even speak of Zainab, I want to speak about her mother, Fatima. And then you will understand who Zainab is. Then you will understand who Zainab is. My friends, Fatima, she, when the Prophet died and he left, Fatima began mourning for the Prophet. She began crying for him. And she cried in such a way that really, it really surprises us because of the fact that Fatima knows the rules of hijab more than anyone else. And she is crying in a loud voice so that everyone can hear her. And I want you to just understand why, so that you know this, my friends. You see, the Prophet, when he died, and Allah has mentioned this in the Quran, that وَمَا مُحَمَّدٌ إِلَّا الرَّسُولُ, that Muhammad is nothing but a messenger. The people never understood the ayat. The true meaning of the ayat is that, listen, this Muhammad, the first thing is that he is the messenger of Allah. If he is the father of someone, then it is the messenger of Allah who is the father. If he is the brother of someone, it is Rasulullah who is the brother. Meaning if someone is his daughter, then this is not the daughter of Muhammad, this is the daughter of Rasulullah. And this is in real terms I'm saying, my friends. Fatima's relationship to Muhammad was first of being the ummati of Rasulullah. When she lost her father, then she wasn't crying for her father, she was crying for her messenger. My friends, she was crying for her messenger that her imam has been lost, that her imam has died, that her prophet has died, and she's crying for that. Now when you see, when she came and became the wife of Ali, she wasn't the wife of Ali. Ali was not only her husband, Ali was also her imam. Now my friends, understand this. If you understood this relationship, now I want to make you understand. Do you know the wisdom why Fatima was never made a prophet nor an imam? She is masoom, but she's not a prophet, she's not an imam. Fatima is neither a prophet, neither is she an imam. My friends, the reason is that we have example of a prophet who's masoom. We have example of an imam who's masoom. We have 12 imams who are masoom. We have one prophet who's masoom. And when we look at the masoom, the list of masoom, we see that yes, we have the example of masoom who are imams. But you know what? We don't have an example of a Shia who's masoom. My friends, Fatima was the first Shia of Ali. You want to know who a real Shia was? Fatima was the Shia of Ali. That's why when her imam was put in the house, she went out to defend her imam. She went out to defend her imam, not her husband. You think she cared about Fadak? She went out to see that, listen, my imam has been isolated in his house and I'm here to defend my imam. Fatima was that Shia of Ali, that Ali, when he looks back at Fatima, you see how he sees Fatima. You want to know how he sees Fatima? Fatima, when she came, when she did what she did for Ali, she is the one who stood in front of the door so that they don't come in for Ali. She is the one who went out to the court and took herself out in front of others. She is the one who bore it of being called a liar in the court of the Khulafa. They called her a liar. They called her everything. She went through that pain and that tragedy so that she can defend the imam, that she can protect the imam. And she went out to cry. She went out to cry and she cried loud. Why? Because she wanted to know that a tragedy and zulm has happened to her imam.
That's why when Imam Hussein made a place for her to cry, she used to go out and cry. So many problems that Fatima faced, that Fatima herself says, Subbat alayya masaibun, law subbat alal ayyam, lasirna layaliya. So many sufferings fell upon me, that if they fell on the day would turn to night. So much suffering. And you know, when Fatima went out and she used to cry in the house that Imam Ali made, she used to take Hassan and Hussein with her. And it was strange. It was a strange thing. You know why? Because when she used to go there, she used to have a majlis there when she would say, and it was a strange majlis. And I say strange because you see, the one who's reciting the majlis is ma'soom, and the ones who are listening are ma'soom. No other majlis was like the majlis that Fatima is the one doing the zikr of Rasulullah, and Hassan and Hussein are the ones who are crying listening to the zikr. But when Fatima used to go out, so many problems fell on her. Just want you to understand this. So many problems fell on her that when she went out to cry, her back was bent and she had a stick in her hand and she used to walk with that walking stick. I asked the historian, how old is Fatima? They said she was 18 years old. He said, 18 years old and a walking stick? What has happened? Fatima became old in her young age. She became old in her young age, defending Rasulullah and defending Imam Ali. When Fatima came out, you see, this is how it happened. When she came out to defend Ali, really, she went through a lot for Ali. She went through a lot for her Imam. Now Imam Ali, really, when he came and met Fatima on her deathbed, you know, and keep the whole history in mind. And I will ask Fatima, when she went through all the problems, Fatima, I will ask you, listen, you went through problems for Ali, you know, the door was broken down on you because of Ali. You had to go through the court because of Ali. You had to face insults because of Ali. You went through all of these things because of Ali. But when Ali came to your deathbed, you are asking Ali, that Ali, are you pleased with me? Are you pleased with me? Imam Ali, imagine the pain he went through. Imagine the pain he went through listening to that question of Fatima. And said, Fatima, as an imam, I'm asking you, Fatima, I am pleased with you, but you tell me, are you pleased with me? Are you pleased with me? Fatima was the first and the greatest Shia of Ali. She was the one who came out to defend when no one else was. And if this was Fatima, now you understand who Zainab is. Zainab is the first Shia of Hussain, and she is the first Shia of Zainul Abidin. Zainab is the first and the greatest Shia. When Imam Hussein is dying, then it's Zainab who's coming out to give support to the Imam and saying, my Imam, let me put you on the horse. Do not be put in that situation. I will give you a hand. She is taking Imamat and putting Imamat on Zuljana. And when the tents were burned, Hamid ibn Muslim said that I saw the tents are burned and all the ladies are on the ground, but I saw one lady who was going inside a burning tent and coming outside, going inside and coming outside. And when I went close, I saw her carrying a young man on her back and carrying him to safety. And I looked at her, and this was Zainab al-Kubra, who's carrying Imam Zainul Abidin from a burning tent. my friend Zainab-e Kubra, she went through so many hardships so that she can protect her Imam. When the soldiers came and they wanted to kill Zainul Abidin, she is the one who came in between and said, "You will have to kill me first. You will have to kill me first before you kill." But Zainab, you know, when Zainab, she took the responsibility of defending Hussein and defending Sajjad, and she took that responsibility. But a time came, my friends, when Zainab's heart was also broken. Zainab's heart was also broken, and that was when she lost the amanat of Hussein and Shah. When Zainab lost Sakina and Shah, now she said, "What can I tell my brother? What can I tell my brother about my Sakina? I could not take care of Sakina. Sakina has left me." This is the reason why, you see, when the prisoners, just few more statements, and inshallah you cry and give your condolences. You give your condolences to Fatima. Maybe, my friends, this is the reason that Zainab, that amanat was so, that was so sweet for her. Destiny had it that she also be buried in the same place where Sakina was buried. Maybe it was destined that Zainab go back to Sakina. Zainab went back to Sakina, and there you see that she also became Shaheed. And when we go there to Sham, we see Zainab is there, Sakina is there. Maybe these two shared that relationship. My friends, let me tell you this. Let me tell you, so you know, this last few things, and inshallah may Allah give you ajr, may Allah accept your ibadah, may Allah help you through all the difficulties in life, may Allah give you strength and have increased the love of Ahlul Bayt in your heart, and give the condolences to Fatima now as she has come to take your tears. My friends, when you see Zainab and the other prisoners were released, Zainab wanted to have a majlis, and she had a majlis. All the people, all the women gathered there, and they cried for Hussein. They cried for 7 days for the martyrs of Karbala. They cried for them. To their heart's extent, they cried. And then after they cried, now the time came for them to leave. Imam Sajjad, he asked the ladies to get on. With respect, they were sent off from Sham, and everyone got onto their camels. Imam, now only Zainab and Imam Sajjad are left. Zainab came to her camel. She came to her camel. Something she remembered. She remembered something. What can I say? She began to run backwards. Imam Sajjad said, "Aunt Zainab, where are you going?" He followed her. Imam Zainab went back there. She went into the prison. She went on the grave of Sakina. Fell on the grave of Sakina and said, "Sakina, we are leaving, but you're not coming with us." Woo!